Welcome, listeners, to time for an awakening on Black Talk Radio Network, new media for the new millennia. This is a history and current events program from a cultural perspective. We find this program necessary because Hosea 4:6 states, "My people are destroyed for the lack of knowledge." But we as a people can turn this around. Proverbs 4:7 states, "Wisdom is the principal thing. Therefore, get wisdom. With all thy getting, get an understanding." Again, welcome to the program this evening with your hosts, Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. The number to reach us to join the conversation this evening is 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. We're streaming live at several locations. You can go to timeforanawakening.com, which is the homepage, and catch the live stream at that location. You can go to www.blacktalkradionetwork.com/timeforanawakening. Again, that's www.blacktalkradionetwork.com/timeforanawakening, and catch the live stream there also. You can go to ourradionetwork.com. Again, that's ourradionetwork.com, which broadcasts out of the Black Belt, and catch the live stream there. Or you can download TuneIn to any of your handheld devices. TuneIn is a free app. And in that TuneIn search engine, just type in Time for an Awakening. There you'll see the icon and you can stream the program live, even into your car if you have the Bluetooth capabilities or the auxiliary connection. Again, that's Time for an Awakening radio program with the live stream on the TuneIn app. Drop us an email at timeforanawakening@gmail.com. That's timeforanawakening@gmail.com. Time for Awakening also has a fan page on Facebook. In that Facebook search engine, just type in Time for an Awakening radio program. There you'll always see interesting content being posted daily. And do me a favor, before you leave that page, just hit that like button. That's Time for an Awakening radio program with the fan page on Facebook, and Time for Awakening Media is there. Always with the latest podcast of the various programs on Time for an Awakening and interesting articles that you can read, download, and share with your friends at later times. So make that one of your favorites. Put that in your address bar. That's timeforanawakening.com. Timeforanawakening.com will take you straight to Time for an Awakening Media. Tonight, the first hour of the program, hour or so, we might go a little bit over that, will be dedicated to our black farmers and activist and president of the Black Farmers and Agriculturalists Association. Mr. Thomas Burrell will be with us to give us an update on the black farmers' lawsuit against the Stein Seed Company in reference to the fake seed that was sold to our farmers. We'll be right back to get started with the program after a brief word from our sponsors.
Mr. Moderator, our distinguished guests, brothers and sisters, our friends and our enemies. Everybody is here.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
All Insurance Incorporated, an African-American owned and operated insurance agency and business for over 20 years, located at 231 Southeastern Road in Glenside, PA, with other offices in Germantown and West Philadelphia. Call now for commercial insurance quotes, homeowners insurance quotes, automobile insurance quotes, notary and tax services, representing over 15 major A-rated insurance companies, offering a discount on all notary services when you call in for a free quote. Call this number, 215-885-2444. That number is 215-885-2444. 215-885-2444. All Insurance Incorporated.
youth becomes unruly, call Dooley. Dooley Brothers, specializing in shingle, rubber roofs, gutters, downspouts, and vinyl sidings. Call for your free estimate today. 215-224-3882. That's 215-224-3882. Dooley Brothers Roofing, the roofing experts you can trust. That number again, 215-224-3882. 215-224-3882. Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley.
RG Electrical Inspections provides electrical inspections for realtors, licensed electricians, and homeowners. Licensed and insured underwriter, serving Philadelphia and surrounding area. Call today, 484-268-9837.
Overworked? Suffering with an underperforming company, headache customer, staff, or vendors? Or are you a startup who wants to get it right the first time and avoid the costly mistakes? We turned a $24,000 a year odd job handyman service into a seven-figure high-end custom home builder and commercial contractor licensed and operating in three states. This is just one transformation created for entrepreneurs like you in various industries around the country. Not what you're used to from accounting and business consulting? Well, welcome to New Business Solutions. If you're ready to go beyond advising, coaching, and training and get implemented results, call 301-244-9072. Let New Business Solutions apply the best comprehensive administrative, accounting, operations, human resources, management, sales, and marketing to help you actualize your vision for yourself and your company. From anywhere nationally, call 301-244-9072. Spelled new as in numerous on your device right now. Book your free consultation at newbusinesssolutions.com.
History is a clock that people use to tell their political and cultural time of day. It is also a compass that people use to find themselves on the map of human geography. History tells of people where they have been and what they have been, where they are and what they are. Most important, history tells a people where they still must go, what they still must be. The relationship of history to the people is the same as the relationship of a mother to her child.
From antiquity to the present, our people need to develop a new paradigm. It's time for an awakening. With your host, Brother Elliot. Sundays, 7 p.m., Fridays at 8 p.m. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit us up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com. Welcome back to Time for an Awakening. And before we get started with our program this evening, I want to welcome in my co-host, Philadelphia activist and tour guide at the African American Museum here in Philadelphia at 7th and Arch Street. Brother Richard is with us. Brother Richard.
Yes, sir, Brother Ellen.
How are you, sir?
I'm doing fine today. I'm looking forward to our update by, Mr. Burrell and the Black Farmers. I think it's important for us to just keep up with what's going on in relationship to that.
That's been a thing that Time for Awakening always has been dedicated to, is working with and talking about and dealing with our farmers. From basically almost the start of this program, 9 years ago when we went to Resto Radio, we had farmers up from the Black Farmers and Agricultural Association down in North Carolina, contact with the Southern Cooperative, different farmers coming back and forth, the named plaintiffs from the big Pickford versus Glickman lawsuit has been on the program, Mr. Lucius Abrams, Eddie Slaughter. We've always been up on this issue. We had Mr. Burrell on in, I think it was August, to kind of give us details on the lawsuit that was filed against the Stein Seed Company for selling thousands of dollars of fake seed to Black farmers in several states. And we're here to get an update from our guest, activist and president of the Black Farmers Agriculturalist Association in Memphis. Mr. Thomas Burrell is with us. Mr. Burrell, how are you, sir?
Brother Elliott, how are you? We're in good health and excellent spirits. And to Brother Richards, how are you all tonight?
Great, great.
Great, sir. Great. Mr. Burrell, you know, I've been kept abreast of this thing going on. Brother Richard shared the article with me almost at the same time as Mr. Rogers forwarded me the court, you know, the actions that went on in court. We talked a little bit about it on the program on Friday, and I told the listeners I was going to reach out to you and see if you could come on and give us a detailed description on what happened, you know, from the men that were there. So I'm going to turn things over to you, Mr. Burrell. You can give us an update. In fact, some of the listeners that might not be aware, which we kind of always talk about it, and we posted it on our Facebook page, but for the listeners that might not be aware, give them the little synopsis of what had went on leading up to this lawsuit before you go into what happened in court.
Well, Brother Elliott, thank you again. Yes, this is Thomas Burrell, president of the Black Farmers and Agriculturalist Association. On this past Thursday, January the 3rd, a federal court judge, a federal judge in the District of Western Tennessee by the name of John T. Folks, handed the African-American community, Brother Elliott and Brother Richard, one of the best gifts that could have come down from a court ruling. He ruled, among other things, that the defendants in this particular lawsuit, is a lawsuit regarding black farmers, again, being the victims of shenanigans, schemes, and unlawful plots to discriminate against them and ultimately drive them out of business by selling them fake and otherwise inferior soybean seeds that they purchased to the extent of several hundred thousands of dollars. This lawsuit, Brother Elliott, Brother Richard, right, and this ruling, rightly understood, should serve as a further model of how the African-American community, if it coalesces, comes together, associate, can defeat, as it were, the Goliaths, the behemoth, the five, the six, the $7 billion corporations who otherwise would be immune and who otherwise would be able to slide home scot-free for violating the constitutional rights of black farmers, their heirs, and et cetera. This lawsuit, though, as I said, rightly understood, should serve as a model not only for the black farming community, because the statutes that we use, the laws that we maintain and allege that were violated are not unique to black farmers. These same laws have been violated against black businesses in Philadelphia, in New York, in Los Angeles, etc., and hither, and thither, and yon. The question then becomes, how did this group of black farmers coalesce, come together, and put together a lawsuit that would sustain even the proliferation of hundreds of thousands of dollars being spent for legal fees and given to large, what we would call silk stockings law firms to represent them, against a group of individuals who otherwise will not have and do not have the resources to fight such a giant. That's what this lawsuit was basically about in general. More specifically, as we stated earlier, it was about whether or not the plaintiffs in this particular case, African Americans, historically, we've been defendants. But if we can paraphrase the gospel, now the bottom rail is becoming the top rail. How is it that these individuals were able to come together and file a lawsuit in federal district court and effectively win, to the extent that the judge on Thursday told the defendants, Stein Seeds and other major agricultural farm suppliers, he ordered them to settle with the black farmers. Inherent in that statement is, I don't believe the arguments that you defendants have made. I don't believe the arguments that you state that these farmers' allegations were meritless, that they did not have the, shall we say, requisite particularity that would sustain them. So therefore, the judge effectively said, no, this lawsuit is going forward. The first stop in going forward, Brother Elliot, Brother Richard, would be to mediate. And if the farmers don't agree with the mediation, then effectively the judge is going to put 12 people on the jury.
Mr. Burrell, help me with this. Now, at the hearing, it wasn't necessary or you didn't have to present some of the evidence that you talked about previously on the program. Was it any evidence presented or did the judge seen some of the evidence? Or how does that work?
Oh, yes. There was heated discussions between the defendants and all of the, as I said, six stocking law firms, the big giant law firms representing this giant of a seed company called Stein Seeds. Stein Seeds, for all intents and purposes, is the largest seed breeder in the world. They are the largest seed breeder in the world, worth several billion dollars. So yes, evidence was presented because they were prepared to give a PowerPoint presentation to show the judge that here again, our allegations were not sufficient enough to sustain this case going forward. They were prepared to show that our allegations were meritless, that effectively these farmers were just making up these ridiculous assertions about whether or not the defendants, the Stein Seeds, had indeed sold them inferior seeds. Up to this point, they've been trying to convince the court and the public that these farmers are just angry because they lack the requisite experience to be successful in agriculture. The judge refuted that statement himself by saying, no, these are indeed experienced farmers. So they put on a plethora. They put on just several minutes of arguments as to why he should dismiss this case out of hand. But here again, and then he asked our attorneys to refute their allegations. So, yeah, the arguments went back and forth, and they cited this particular statute. They cited this piece of evidence. But at the end of the day, the judge indicated to him that he was very, very intimate about the allegations that we raised, that he had read these complaints thoroughly, and he is going to order, as a matter of course, going to the next step level. Not to try to turn this into a law a case, but basically a judge is a fact finder. He's the first fact finder. If you get past the judge, as a matter of course, he sends you to the next fact finder, which would be the mediator, which is what he did. If the parties don't agree to mediation, and by the way, he gave both sides until March the 15th to come back to see if they have resolved this issue in terms of a settlement. If then the second mediator or the second fact finder in this particular case is not successful, then we would be entitled to the third fact finder, which is a jury. So, yes, the evidence went back and forth.
So if I understand this, and I have to say, Mr. Burrell, you know, on Friday, as we were reviewing the article, I was a little concerned about the judge going, and that's out of my ignorance, the statement I'm getting ready to make, a little concerned about sending it to the mediator. If, as the article said, that y'all had presented and he agreed that the evidence was valid in relationship to it. But you're clarifying that this is a process. So I'm a little bit at ease. In this mediation, is this now about the defining how much harm should be compensated to the Black farmers based off of this? Or is it continue, as you imply, just continuing to validate the evidence as being valid that the farmers are presenting?
Well, both. The last thing that you made is, yes, the mere fact, here again, Brother Richard, the mere fact, Brother Elliot, that he denied them their motion, inherent with that, he is saying now the case is going forward. As we said, as a matter of course, as a matter of process, there are these three entities, these three stops along the way. Effectively, when you file a lawsuit, the first stop is with the judge. You are asking him to allow you to go all the way, to go the distance, as it were. The finish line would be the jury, but you have to go past the first stop, because at that level, the defendant is going to try to get the judge to dismiss it, to not allow you to come to court, to not allow you to do what they would call waste judicial resources. Don't tie the court up with these frivolous allegations. So to the extent that he ruled against them, then that means, no, it is going to go forward. And the next step is in mediation. So mediation is a win to the extent that it means that you are now allowed to go forward. The question then becomes, how far down the road will you go? But as a matter of course, he is obliged to say the next stop then is to see whether A, the plaintiff, and B, the defendants, can work this out amicably. Can they come to a decision? But they are not bound. They are not, the judge is not going to force the plaintiffs to agree to a settlement. And if they come back on March the 15th then and tell the court, Your Honor, we were unsuccessful at the second level, then he, as a matter of course, will decide when to have a jury. Then he will give both parties the opportunity to cross-examine or to do discoveries and interrogatories and all of the paperwork to prepare for trial. But effectively, that was a win. Keep in mind, here you have black farmers who have been the victims of the shenanigans of these large corporations. They've already lost money. Now they're having to scrap up resources, as it were, to fight this giant. Here again, what the judge did on last Thursday was to tell David, yes, you now can go ahead and get ready to do whatever it is you do to meet the Goliath. And historically, we love that analogy. It's all right to be a David in this particular case.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Burrell, got a couple of questions, and me and Richard will go back and forth with this. The significance of what you men, and I assume it's some women that involve farmers, I know Ms. Rogers is involved. The significance of what you did, I think our people need to look at that across the board. In anything we're dealing with, and I'll give an example of what I'm talking about. I know that when the farmers bought, and it's farmers from several different states that was bamboozled this way. When the farmers realized that something was wrong with this seed and came to the Black Farmers and Agricultural Association, which some of the men that were messed up were, I know that when you came to the determination that this billion-dollar company was involved in nefarious work, and you said, we ought to sue them, I know that you had some of our people that were either afraid, that said, well, we can't sue these people. We don't have the resources. We're wasting time. We can't win. I know it was a fight for you to be able to get our people on one page to say, listen, win or lose, we got to fight this. Talk about the significance of that. To me, I think it's very significant. And Richard, I want you to chime in on this, because to get our people on one page to say, listen, let's do this together, it's a job. It's a victory.
Well, here again, that's one of the reasons we were saying that this lawsuit rightly understood to include the questions that you just raised. How is it, A, we look at Thursday as a victory in that you now will be able to sue Stein. The question is, why is there so few victims in the African-American community? There are thousands of Steins.
Yes.
There are thousands of Goliaths out there. There are Stein seed companies in Philadelphia, analogously speaking. There are multi-billion dollar corporations in Detroit and California and et cetera, discriminating against African-Americans. Here again. But what, as you just said, and we appreciate that question, how was this little tiny organization able to coalesce its members to get them to pool their resources to go against this, shall we say, behemoth? This is, in effect, how civil rights ought to be fought. One of the decisions, a decision that was made several years ago in a case that was adjudicated or opined by the late Justice Thurgood Marshall, talked about how important it was for individuals to pool their resources together, and the court really appreciates that. And he talked about this in a case called UAW versus Brock. Brock was the secretary, as it were, of transportation. And here again, he was denying vis-a-vis his office certain individuals in this union the right to be able to determine them to self-determination. And judge, shall we say, the judge indicated that it is important. And if I could just paraphrase, he used this word. He says an association is but the medium through which its individual members seek to make more effective the expression of their views. The very force that caused individuals, which is the question you asked, to band together, and I'm still quoting the judge, in an association will thus provide some guarantee that the association will work to promote their interests. Now, how do you get people to buy into an association? Because today in our community, people will accuse you of being a scam. They're saying, why should I give my money to become a member of this association? Well, if something is for me, it's for me. That's the argument. But here again, it may be for you, but there's a process, as you said, Elliot, that you have to go through. You can't get a Supreme Court judge to rule in your favor. You're not going to get a federal court judge to rule in your favor, even though the laws may favor you if you don't have the wherewithal, the requisite resources to sustain the fight. So as we said, as you said, sure, the other side is prepared to fight. They're going to give evidence. They're going to tell the court why you shouldn't. Now, how can you win that argument, Brother Elliot, Brother Richard, if you don't have also some resources to refute and counter that fight? So the problem in the African-American community in general is that we have not developed an appreciation around those associations dealing with economic development and contracts. We will support associations historically, and this is not an indictment against those associations. We are attuned to associations being able to give us access or accommodation, as we say. I'll join the association that's fighting to make sure I can sit down next to white folks, shall we say, in a restaurant or in the schools or in the X or in the Y. These lawsuits that the black farmers have taken on are not accommodation lawsuits. They are basic. Now, they are still civil rights lawsuits, but they have to do more with contracts. In other words, every lawsuit that we've been involved in, to include the black farmers lawsuit, was not that we wanted to sit next to white farmers. We're not wanting to sit next to Stein Company. We want to be able to compete with white farmers. We want the contracts that these white farmers are getting. Contracts are the tools by which you create wealth, store wealth, and transfer wealth. We're not going to get out of poverty unless we develop an appreciation for contracting. Historically, in the African-American community, when you say now join an association, and the primary purpose that we are going to do in this association is to, shall we say, demand our constitutional rights to access to contracts. When you cut that, your population down, because most members are comfortable with, here again, the accommodation side. So now you have to be able to convince, for the lack of a better phrase, your members why it is important that whatever businesses they're in, the reason we are losing, we lost the contracts in the hair care industry, we're losing contracts in the hotels, we're losing contracts with the service station. The nail shops are being run now by individuals coming from elsewhere, but they're all contracting. Mm-hmm. So we're back now to which was the proverbial civil rights, the original civil rights, the civil rights of 1866, in the 1860s, Brother Richard, not the 1960s, had to do more with contracting. So therefore, when our members came to us and says, wait a minute, I entered into a contract with Stein Seeds to buy X quality seeds, and they sold me Y quality seeds. I entered into a contract for a thoroughbred racehorse, and they gave me a donkey, as it were. So now you're in the contract violations, meaning to enforce that contract, you almost got to go to court. So here again, it's a matter of just making sure your members understand the difference between basically accommodation civil rights side of the equation as opposed to the contracting side.
And Mr. Burrell, does that mean, for a point of clarity, in relationship to that understanding, that we're talking about a business-to-business suit compared to a business-to-government, that the right, that the violation has not been done by government, but has been done by another business, and you're going to the court because of the contract violation by this business in relationship to
precisely. What we're saying is you start off in the boardroom, as it were. But more often than not, if you can't get what you are entitled to in the boardroom, we started off with Stein Seed by calling them, asking them, as it were, to do the right thing. But here again, our civil rights is like a coin. There are two sides. The head side is the legislative branch will create the right. The tail side of the coin is, if they don't do the right thing, you go across the street to the judicial side, which is the court. And to paraphrase the gospel here again, if I might, you know, God, when David came back from battle and the enemy had taken all that he had, he asked God, shall we, quote unquote, pursue? And God responded, says, yeah, pursue. In our community, suing is a misnomer. Suing is somewhat of a bad word. But God told David, you know, pursue and without fail, recover all. There's a lot we're not going to recover, Brother Richard, Brother Elliot, unless we can develop an appreciation for pursuing, which is what the judge was saying here, Judge Thurgood Marshall was saying in the UAW versus Brock scenario. If you want to get your stuff back, you need to pursue. And as I said, in our community, there's somewhat of a taboo. We don't mind being the defendant, but the very fact that you are a plaintiff, meaning now you are on the offense, you're going after someone, you have to sue. So in other words, we didn't win the other day because we were running from Stein. We won because we are what? Running towards Stein. We are pursuing. And as you said, Brother Richard, in the African-American community, when you are pursuing a giant, most people think you're not going to win because historically the giants have been pursuing the African-American community.
Mr. Burrell, you mentioned, and I recall you mentioning in August when you were on, about the case centering around the RICO violation of the RICO Act. Explain how that RICO Act and Stein kind of fits in.
Well, as we said earlier, thank you for that question. When we look at civil rights, again, we don't look at an act of Congress as a right. In 1970, Congress, the legislative branch, passed a law called the Racketeering Influence Corrupt Organization Act of 1970, otherwise known as RICO. That act was created for the most part to get the gangsters, the mafiosa, and criminals, as it were, people who are engaged in criminal behavior affecting interstate commerce, out of business. Congress said then that the American business cannot and should not be infiltrated by individuals whose primary purpose is to infiltrate a corporation, to be a member of an association or an enterprise, and use that enterprise's resources to promote their personal gains. So here again, though, RICO, also now in the last maybe 10 or 20 years, has been used also against corporations, because there is no such thing as under RICO, if you violate a particular act, whether you are a criminal or otherwise, the penalties are basically the same. In RICO, what we argued in this particular case is that Stein seized employees and the people who were associated. A lot of them will get a job at a corporation, embed themselves in the corporation to do nothing but use the corporation's resources to take advantage of individuals who they otherwise wanted to take advantage of anyway. But RICO makes it basically a violation for you to even hire a person or to be associated with a person who's going to come into a corporation and violate a person's civil rights. Our chief argument was the sales representatives that were working for the Stein Seed had basically an ulterior motive, an agenda, and that was to retaliate against black farmers, to discriminate against black farmers. So they are using their position at Stein. They're using their position at the bank. They're using their position at this corporation, as it were, in Philadelphia. They get a job working for this corporation in Detroit, and they use their position to take advantage of black folks. And as a result of that, they violated this act. So therefore, we were not alleging that Stein itself or the corporation had, you know, said, I'm going to go down to Tennessee and Mississippi and sell these guys fake seeds. Because Stein, they are renowned for selling basically genetically modified seeds. But they hired person A. They hired person B. They associated with person C, who may have harbored racial animus against these black farmers. This salesperson in Mississippi may be situated close enough to the black farmer and saying, you know what, I want his land. I want to put him out of business. I'm going to get me a job at Stein, and I'm going to sell this guy fake seeds, etc. And therefore, when that person, that employee, violated the civil rights of the black farmers, and if he was working for Stein, as it were, now Stein is responsible for that. What RICO is designed to do is to tell corporations, you have to get rid of individuals. We're going to penalize you for hiring folks who harbor racial animus against certain individuals. And that's basically what RICO is doing in a nutshell.
Let's go to Newport News, take a call. Newport News.
Hey, good evening. Good evening, gentlemen. Mr. Burrell, so you kind of really hit on what I was messaging you when I said I did catch that the judge said something about the case might be better served being moved to the region where the bulk of the tort occurred, meaning moving it away from Tennessee. That was all I was trying to exchange with you over the internet, saying that based on a case that I went through from 89 to about 92, I kind of expected that. So you've hit on it, that the unknown associations of these supposedly desperate people that have no connections are in fact a way that discrimination has been used across this country, even in banking, even in real estate, it's embedded in it. My expertise is really in home repair and stuff, but the very same systems are being used against black people because you really don't understand or know the association of these people that appear to only have a business relationship.
Precisely.
Thank you.
Excellent. Yes. Yes. Brother Elliot and Brother Richard, if I might, the question that he's raising was one of the questions, the first question that the judge raised as it relates to evidence, and that was a question of what's called jurisdiction.
Mm-hmm.
We filed a claim in Memphis, Tennessee, the Federal District Court for the Western District in Memphis. The defendants were arguing that, Stein is from Iowa. Another defendant argued that we are from Missouri. Another defendant argued that we are from Mississippi. Another defendant argued that we are from North Carolina. And the list went on and on and on. And trying to tell the judge, you do not, Your Honor, your court does not have jurisdiction. But keep in mind, as the caller just said, under the RICO statute, there is a clause that says, among other things, that there is a national conspiracy. And if one of those individuals, when we argued, one of those defendants set up shop here in Memphis, even though he was not from Memphis, he was not from Tennessee, but he came to Tennessee to set up shop, as it were, to perpetrate his schemes, and we argued that that gave this judge, as it were, jurisdiction. Just as the brother said, this is a problem for black businesses, not only in farming, but as he said, in home development, in the transportation industry. Blacks trying to get a loan from banks. Banks probably are just as guilty of violating RICO as Stein Seed. And that's why we were saying, Brother Elliot, that this lawsuit, rightly understood, should be a model. The African-American community now in Philadelphia should say, wait a minute. You mean to tell me the same statute that you used against Stein for selling bad seeds to black farmers in Tennessee could be used against corporations here in Philadelphia for selling black contractors inferior building material? The answer is yes. The black community in Chicago should be meeting in to say how many black contractors or black businessmen and women have been violated, have had their rights, civil rights violated in Chicago and in L.A. We can go on and on and on. The statute RICO is not limited to farming. There is no such thing as a RICO farming statute. RICO will apply whether it's in agriculture, whether it's the hair care industry, whether it's the trucking industry, the construction industry, the X industry, the Y industry, and the Z industry. And that's why this lawsuit again was so important, is hopefully we should be able to go back now to the African-American community and say this is a tool. If I could paraphrase the gospel one more time, when God gave Moses the rod, he says, whatever you do, yeah, it will get you across the Red Sea, but don't throw it down because you can use it in the wilderness. If you're thirsty and you need water, you tap the rock and speak to the rock, and water will come forward. When you cross the Jordan River, this same rod will get you across the Jordan. RICO will get us across the hurdles of black farmers. Not only RICO, but other statutes will solve the problems with black farmers, black construction workers, black X, black Ys, and black Zs. And that's why this decision was so important and so significant to the overall African-American community.
And I want to come back to something in that Elliot was raising in relationship to the point you're making about the laws, because the power of the association to pursue those laws. Would you say, and because I was listening to the caller, he seemed like a personal lawsuit in using the law. Would you say the power of the association also is a integral, an important element that people of like come together to utilize this law and for their repair?
That's precisely what the judge was saying in the case here with UAW versus Brock. The court itself says we would rather, the court would rather that these cases be adjudicated by, quote, unquote, an association. Because now the association, and let me just read what he is saying. He says here in this case that the doctrine of associational standing recognizes that the primary reason people join an organization is often to create an effective vehicle for vindicating the interests that they share with others. End of quote. So if the brother there, it may be a personal, he may personally have a problem. What we need to know, how many other sisters and brothers in his industry are experiencing a problem? More importantly, what is the association? Is there an association that they can use to pool their resources? He wouldn't be able, and I'm not saying him, he may be financially able, but suppose he were to pool his resources with all other individuals who are otherwise similarly situated, and they form the association, and the association is going to go out and hire the attorneys. The association will go out and do the X and the Y and the Z. That is precisely, and this is why it is so important to recognize that the First Amendment, Brother Elliot, Brother Richard, to the Constitution, countenance and recognize the power of an association. The First Amendment says Congress will make no laws respecting basically religion, meaning how people associate. They said the First Amendment will give you the right to associate if you are what? Assembled peaceably. The association here again, that means membership. And the association will be able to petition the government for redress of grievances. So here again, we'll need to develop the art, the science behind coalescing and using an association as a vehicle to vindicate the rights of all of the individuals in our community.
And if I may follow up, you know, Brother Burrell and Elliot, because something that you said before and making a comparison between civil rights as far as kind of like social in relationship to law, and what I want to home in on where I think we're at in the sense of this association, that we as business people have to recognize that it's powerful and important as business people to be a part of this association, that it isn't just about our social relationship, but it's about our business relationship that we need to form. And therefore, it provides the wealth, the value that you speak of. Am I correct in making that?
Precisely. That's not only what we're saying, but that's what the High Court is also saying, the value of association. Keep in mind, when people, the laws that we talk about Congress passing, most of those laws have been passed because of the lobbying and of high-powered associations, as it were. The associations are going to hire lobbyists, whether we like that or not. That's just the way the world works. So here again, if we're going to make the changes, we want, A, an association to get our congressional leaders, our legislators to, A, pass the law. But what good is it going to do the African-American if there's the 14th Amendment that was passed in 1868, if the Civil Rights Act of 1866 was passed, or the Civil Rights Act of 1964, or RICO in 1970? Sure, the laws are on the books, but how do we access those tools? The laws are there. Is it that we need Congress to create new laws, or do we need groups to enforce the laws that are already there? Our problem in the African-American community, and this is not an indictment against legislators, we don't necessarily need new laws. What we need are associations that are going to enforce the laws that have been created. Remember, we said RICO. Congress passed RICO in 1970. right? That's almost 50 years ago. The law that we used last Thursday, we didn't, and I'm not indicting legislators, but legislators weren't necessarily in the room. The judge didn't rule that because the Black Caucus was there, or because the city council was there, or because the state representatives were there. He was there that we, because we were able to show him that these corporations have violated laws that these people passed 50 years ago. So it's a matter of understanding contract. If we're going to enforce a contract, then we have to understand the tools that we will need to get that judge or a court of competent jurisdiction to say that, yeah, you violated the Civil Rights Act of 1964, or you violated the Voting Rights Act of 1965, or the Civil Rights Act of 1866. One other point. When Miss Rosa Parks made history in Montgomery, Alabama over 50 years ago, the law that they used had been passed 90 years earlier, and that is the right to contract. The judge didn't rule against Alabama because Miss Rosa's feet hurt. They ruled because you gave Miss Rosa a contract. She gave you her nickel, and on the contract law, even though she didn't own the bus, she leased that seat. Therefore, she did not have to give her seat to a white person because effectively it was her seat. And you violated the Civil Rights Act of 1866, which was a law passed 90 years before she got on the bus in 1956. That is why today when you book a flight on an airline, one of the first things they're going to ask you after they take your money, as it were, is what seat do you want? I don't own United Airlines, but if I contract, key phrase, with United Airlines for seat in row 6, you know, next to the window from Memphis to Philadelphia, that's my seat. On the contract law, even if the President of the United States wanted to get on the plane, that's proper why they provide him Air Force One. It's contract law. It's contract law. Did I say contract law? So here again, the laws are on the books. The question is, do we have the association that our members can use to enforce those laws?
It's funny you bring that up because now when I go to movies in certain theaters, you have to select your seat. And that becomes in relationship to the exchanges. You know, at one time you just can go and sit in any seat. Now, when you purchase, you're not purchasing just to be in the theater. You're purchasing your seat in the theater.
You contracted with the theater. You don't own the theater, but from, you know, from a certain point in time, from 6 o'clock in the evening to 9 o'clock, that's my seat. So if somebody were to get into my seat, I have a contractual right to call the attendant and say, it's like if I lease a car. If I lease a car from Hertz, if I lease a car from Enterprise, Enterprise can't call me and say, hey, you know, by the way, bring the car back because somebody else needs to go from A to B. No, I don't own the vehicle, but a lease contract is just as powerful almost as an ownership contract.
We're going to take a brief break, and when we come back, we'll continue the conversation with activist and president of the Black Farmers and Agricultural Association, Mr. Thomas Burrell. We're getting an update on the lawsuit filed by the Black Farmers against this billion-dollar Stein seed company. And before we go to break, I want our listening audience to understand something, that this is very significant because you don't see it plastered all over these news agencies across the country as a top story. They don't want black folks to know about what has went on here. This Stein seed company hired, according to the information that Ms. Rogers sent me, Mr. Burrell, this Stein seed company hired these two high-priced attorneys, Paul Robinson and Jill Stranch.
No, that was the high attorneys now.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry.
Okay. Nope.
But listen, they have high-powered attorneys behind this Stein seed company. They're a billion-dollar company. So
we
can see that this is significant, that they were forced into mediation with the black farmers to deal with this issue of fake seed being sold to black farmers in several states. Give us a call. Put your information out here. Ask some questions. 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. We'll be right back.
are tuned in to the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts and live program scheduling, visit us on the web at blacktalkradionetwork.com.
All Insurance Incorporated, an African-American owned and operated insurance agency and business for over 20 years, located at 231 Southeastern Road in Glenside, PA, with other offices in Germantown and West Philadelphia. Call now for commercial insurance quotes, homeowners insurance quotes, automobile insurance quotes, notary and tax services, representing over 15 major A-rated insurance companies, offering a discount on all notary services when you call in for a free quote. Call this number, 215-885-2444. That number is 215-885-2444. 215-885-2444. All Insurance Incorporated.
Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley. Dooley Brothers, specializing in shingle, rubber roofs, gutters, downspouts, and vinyl sidings. Call for your free estimate today. 215-224-3882. That's 215-224-3882. Dooley Brothers Roofing, the roofing experts you can trust. That number again, 215-224-3882. 215-224-3882. Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley.
The economic philosophy of black nationalism only means that we should own and operate and control the economy of our community. You would never find, you can't open up a black store in a white community. White man won't even patronize you. And he's not wrong. He got sense enough to look out for himself. And you who don't have sense enough to look out for yourself. The white man is too intelligent to let someone else come and gain control of the economy of his community. But you will let anybody come in and control the economy of your community. Control the housing, control the education, control the jobs, control the businesses, under the pretext that you want to integrate. No, you're out of your mind. The economic philosophy of black nationalism only means that we have to become involved in a program of re-education to educate our people into the importance of knowing that when you spend your dollar out of the community in which you live, the community in which you spend your money becomes richer and richer. The community out of which you take your money becomes poorer and poorer. And because these Negroes who have been misled, misguided, are breaking their necks to take their money and spend it with the man. The man is becoming richer and richer, and you're becoming poorer and poorer. And then what happens? The community in which you live becomes a slum. It becomes a ghetto. The conditions become run down. And then you have the audacity to complain about poor housing in a run-down community. Why, you run it down yourself when you take your dollar.
This is what we have to do. Now, the other thing we'll have to do is this. Always anchor our external direct action with the power of economic withdrawal. Now, we are poor people. Individually, we are poor when you compare us with white society in America. We are poor. Never stop to get that collectively, that means all of us together, collectively we are richer than all the nations in the world with the exception of nine. Did you ever think about that? After you leave the United States, Soviet Russia, Great Britain, West Germany, France, and I can name others, the American Negro collectively is richer than most nations of the world. We have an annual income of more than $30 billion a year, which is more than all of the exports of the United States and more than the national budget of Canada. Did you know that? That's power right there if we know how to pool it. Children are concerned. Now, if you are not prepared to do that, we do have an agenda that we must follow. And our agenda calls for withdrawing economic support from you. So as a result of this, we're asking you tonight to go out and tell your neighbors not to buy Coca-Cola in Memphis. Go by and tell them not to buy sealed test milk. Tell them not to buy, what is all the bread? Wonder Bread. And what is other bread come to Jesse? Tell them not to buy Hart's bread. As Jesse Jackson has said, up to now, only the garbage men have been feeling pain. Now we must kind of redistribute the pain. Black institutions.
Welcome back to Time for an Awakening, and we're joined in conversation this evening with the president of the Black Farmers and Agriculturalists Association, Memphis. Mr. Thomas Burrell is with us, talking about giving us the Time for Awakening listening audience an update on what has been going on in reference to our farmers and the lawsuit against the Stein Seed Company. Mr. Burrell, it's a follow-up question from our listener in Newport News.
Yes, Mr. Burrell, I'm trying to think back from when I first heard you talk, and I tried to stay in touch with you over Twitter. If you can share with us what it was like when you realized what had been done to you. If I remember correctly, you actually went to some of these testing facilities. I don't know if it was local people, 4-H, or other professionals, where you verified that what you suspected was wrong with the seed was in fact true, which means you got the information and made sure that you could verify what your claim was before you proceeded to getting some legal help. And I can imagine you probably had to vet quite a few lawyers to get the two experts that you ended up staying with. I wanted to know if you could talk about that a little bit. And also, if it's possible to get in touch with your agency to find out how we can push this on social media to wake some people up, because this whole process can be used for a lot of things that are wrong with our people right now. Thank you.
Thank you, Cole. Am I allowed to respond at this point?
Yes, sir. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, let me just start with his last question. Of course, we appreciate those questions. Our association is called the Black Farmers and Agriculturalist Association. We are located in Memphis, Tennessee. Our telephone number is 901-522-8880. That's 901-522-8880. Our Facebook page is BFAA. That's like Bob Frank Apple Apple. BFAA-Memphis. Tennessee, BFA-Memphis. Our webpage is www.mybfaa.us, www.mybfaa.us. So I want to thank the caller for that information. His question was evidence. As I said, when our members of the association started to call us and to complain or to raise, shall we say, suspicions about the lack of productivity that they were experiencing from these particular seeds, as I said earlier, a lot of our members are farmers, and we have landowners, we have poultry individuals who are producing other commodities in addition to soybeans. But the soybean producers who had purchased some seeds from this company called Stine. Stine is a, shall we say, seller of genetically modified seeds. And one of the reasons the farmers have to use now genetically modified seeds, particularly those who are farming thousands of acres of land, we have a lot of our members who are large farmers, and they own several million dollars worth of equipment, then they will need the, shall we say, souped up version. A genetically modified seed is like if you were to buy a car and that car will go from 0 to 60 in 10 seconds, and you need to go to 0 to 60 in 5 seconds, Mother Nature may grow a seed that will yield 20 bushels, but you can't pay for that equipment with a 20 bushel per acre yield. You can't service the debt on the $400,000 tractors, the million-dollar cotton pickers, as it were, with a yield of 20 bushels. So you'll need to buy a seed that's more or less modified. That will get the farmer a 60 or 70 bushels per acre to service the debt. So you go to these people who sell the hot rods, as it were. If a soybean seed were an engine, Stine sells the 500 horsepower souped up engines. And the farmers were willing to pay them for those souped up engines, for those souped up soybeans. But what Stine did was they baited and switched. They charged the farmer for the high yielding soybeans and sold them inferior seeds. Therefore, the farmers were not experiencing the higher increases in yield necessary to service their debt. So when they called us, the first thing we started to do is I made a call to the headquarters of Stine in Iowa and indicated to them that our members were complaining about their product and asked this company to send down their experts, their agronomists, their mechanics, as it were, their scientists, to go out and visit some of our members' fields so they could see firsthand before these farmers started to cut the soybeans. It's like a crime scene. Mm-hmm. We wanted them to come and visit the scene of the crime before things started to get messed up, as it were. They sent their experts down. They sent their top-notch people down. Those individuals indicated that, yeah, we see a problem. We also tried to get them, so why don't you then take some samples back? Because these seeds are what is called genetically modified, they have a genetic fingerprint. That is to say, Stine, you will be able to determine whether or not these seeds that we are alleging are not yours. It's kind of like the argument, who's the father, as it were. You take the samples back, do a genetic fingerprint, you have a patent on these seeds, and you tell us whether or not these plants are the progeny or the sons and daughters or the offsprings of these hyped-up seeds that you sold the farmers. They refused to do that. And we allege that that point is they understood and had sufficient evidence that, wait a minute, these are not our plants. So since they wouldn't take a sample, we then took samples and sent those samples, as it were, to laboratories, and the germination came back zero. Germination is basically a phrase to describe the potency of a person, whether or not that person is impotent. What is its ability to reproduce? Germination means that if I were to plant 100 of these seeds, at least 95, a high percent, should germinate. Germinate means to grow, to give birth, to sprout. In this particular case, when the university planted 100 of those seeds, none of them sprouted, which proved that here again there was something wrong. Another analogy of germination, and I will pause, is if I were to print a document on my computer, that document, the resolution is going to be probably 100%. But if I make a copy and then make a copy of a copy and make a copy of the copy, after about 6 or 7 reproductions or copies, it's going to blur. analogously, that's the same thing that happened with a seed. So the certified seed, that souped up seed, after the first generation should not be blurred. It may have lost resolution. So therefore, when we sent those seeds to the lab, they came back 0%, which means they were blurred. We knew at that point in time that our farmers had been duped. Mm. And that's when we filed the lawsuit.
Mr. Burrell, answer me this question, and I don't know, so I'm ignorant of this. The FDA, what is their responsibility in dealing with seed companies that sell seed to farmers? Because it's obvious to me that seed from seed companies, or unless farmers produce their own seed, is producing something for the food supply. So do they have any responsibility in overseeing this type of bait and switch that have went on? Do they have any culpability, or are they responsible in any way?
Excellent question. Seed production is very vital to this country. The Homeland Security is responsible for the purity of seeds.
Okay.
The Department of Agriculture. Also, why is that important? We are the largest producer of food on the planet. The United States is the breadbasket of the world. One of the things that we fear is that a person who would like to create a terrorist attack against us could do that through the food supply chain. So, yes, there are organizations out there, particularly the Department of Agriculture, among other things, who are supposed to make sure, and they do, regulate those corporations, just like the Food and Drug Administration is going to, and the Drug Agency is going to regulate pharmaceuticals. The Department of Agriculture, Homeland Security is going to make sure that nothing is done to tamper with the food supply. So, but the problem has been, black farmers are so small, these major corporations feel that they can get away with it, perhaps, with a small group of black farmers. They knew and know that they would not be able to do that with a larger white community. And that's why we alleged, among other things, that these black farmers were the victims of this shenanigan, these schemes, because of their race. But yes, keep in mind, I'm told at least, that when there was the attack on the World Trade Center in New York, and when the Federal Aviation Commission grounded all of the planes, there was only one group of aviators that were allowed to remain in the air, and they were what is referred to as crop dusters. These are the airplanes that are used to spray chemicals to get rid of bugs and et cetera, et cetera. They were the only group allowed. Why was that? Because this government understood that the safety of our food, the integrity of our food, was so valuable. Until sure, we'll ground United Airlines, we'll ground Southern, we'll ground Brandt, we'll ground Continental, but those individuals who are protecting the food supply, they have to have an exception. So yes, this is extremely important.
Let's go to got a call here, 919. 919, what's your name? 919? Let's put them back on hold. Maybe they stepped away. Let's go to, it's another call from Memphis, 901. 901?
Yes.
Oh, okay. Mrs. Rogers, how are you? I'll put you back on hold.
I'm doing good. Thank you so much for having Mr. Burrell on tonight. I just wanted to make, to answer the question, or make reference to an answer to the question that the gentleman made about the social media aspect of the black farmer story. It has gone viral. If you Google the Black Farmer Settlement, it's in the Washington Post on their Facebook page. Rolling Out magazine had a big article. Over 864 people have shared it. We have 6 active Facebook pages. My page, Patricia A. Rogers, Mr. Burrell's page, Beef of the Black Farmers and Agriculturalists Association, 3 of Bishop Hall's pages. It's out there. People would have to be living in a cave not to know what's going on with the black farmers. when the story first broke, we were on nightly news with Lester Holt, okay? And CNN has posted it, USA Today, the Miami Herald over the weekend. It's everywhere, Mr. Elliott. So tell that gentleman he doesn't have to apply for my job with Mr. Morrell. Okay.
Oh, I don't think he meant anything negative in reference to it.
No, I'm just joking.
Okay.
But also I wanted to make sure that Mr. Morrell talked about the aspect that U.S. Congressman Steve Korn wrote a letter to the U.S. Department of Justice in reference to the black farmers' concerns and allegations about this $3 billion seed giant selling hardworking farmers inferior soybean seeds. The U.S. Department of Justice sent Representative Korn a letter, which is on my Facebook page, which I sent you a copy of as well, saying that they will take action if warranted. Somebody can go to jail as a result of this case. And Ms. Morrell made it emphatically clear that this lawsuit is about a portion of the lawsuit focuses on the RICO Act of 1970, okay? Stein Seed Company is responsible for their employees, okay, in this case.
Thank you for your contribution, Ms. Rogers.
You're welcome.
Yeah, and if I... one thing that comes to mind that I wanted to ask is like that day of Mr. Burrell, and I hear how did y'all feel once the judge and folks, I believe it is, made that ruling as an association, and I had to contextualize this, how did you feel, because success breeds more success. And more participation, I'm assuming. So can you describe how did that reverberate through the association just to have that ruling come through?
Well, that was, as I said earlier, a gift from God. God is getting ready to liberate and answer the prayers that have been sent up from the sons and daughters and the grandparents and granddaughters 100 years ago, 200 years ago, Brother Elliott, who looked up from the cotton fields, who looked up from the tobacco fields 200 years ago and said, God, if you don't do it for us, one day do it for our children. It is interesting to note that 150 years ago, there was a chief justice by the name of Roger B. Taney, and there was a case involved a black man by the name of Dred Scott. And Dred Scott was trying to get his freedom, and you had a Supreme Court justice that said, among other things, Mr. Scott had no rights, and I'm paraphrasing his opinion, that a white man had to respect. Now, here we are 150 years later, that a black judge, and it's out there now, Judge Floakes, an African-American judge, is telling now the great-great-grandsons of the Dred Scotts, the great-great-grandsons of those individuals who bought land and had land taken from them in South Carolina 100 years ago, in Georgia 100 years ago, who were thinking that maybe the justice system is not on our side. Now you have January the 3rd, the first working day of 2019, Brother Elliott, that's a significant day. We're told that black folks were brought to this country in 1619. We just believe that God is liberating us. We believe, to paraphrase the gospel, God told Abraham in Genesis that they will serve them 400 years, but afterward, they will come out with great substance. This is a great year for us. This decision, there should be jubilation and more reason for one, not only for the black farm, but this is a beginning. Our 400 years are up, and we believe the court system, and this is a good time for black folk now to start demanding their rights. God is on our side. The courts are on our side. We have to now come out and do our part. Faith without works are dead. We still have faith, but we have to work. That's where the associations come in. We need the vehicles. We need the tools. But we were ecstatic. We are elated. It is a vindication of our rights. We were being accused of falsely making allegations against this respectful corporation, the largest seed breeder in the world. How dare these black farmers accuse this reputable association of doing something sinister and underhanded? And that decision the other day vindicated our rights. It vindicated our allegations, and it says what can happen when a few who are joined together in my name, what God will do for them with the proverbial Davids versus the Goliaths. As we said, there are a lot of Goliaths out there. We've got the Goliaths in Pennsylvania and Michigan and New York and Ohio and California. So what we, not only were we elated, we're hoping, though, that the African-American community and in general will be equally elated and see, as we said, the laws that we passed were not created for black farmers. There's no Black Farmers RICO. There's no Black Farmers Civil Rights Act of 1964. There's no Black Farmers Civil Rights Act of 1866. The black farmers just happened to be able to pick up the tool, as God told Abraham, and use it. So the brothers who are having, and sisters who are having difficulty getting a contract to produce nails, they're having a hard time getting a contract to open up a service station or a restaurant, this same tool will be able to vindicate their rights as well. But there's that one stop. We will probably have to coalesce and associate together.
Mm-hmm.
It's really powerful, the point that you're making, and if you gentlemen don't mind, because the association that I get is, as you say, that we have to associate. It's interesting that Judge Folks was and is an African-American judge, and who was appointed to that position by Barack Obama, president at that time, because it just to reinforce that it's not just individuals, but that it is that we have to work in concert on various levels, the political, judicial, and in relationship to black farmers and the association as business as groups, not just looking for individual activity. And I think that that's, as you say, something that we have to clearly continue to beat home, that our association with each other is critical in order to be able to generate, and I like the point you made, the wealth that we readily have created for this country since 1619 and can create for ourselves in 2019 forward.
Hey, Mr. Burrell, a couple of questions before we let you go. I know we kept you over time, but it was interesting, the information that you were giving out to the listening audience. I want you to let the listening audience know the importance of if I reflect back on some of the conversations I had with some of the named plaintiffs in the Glickman versus Pickford lawsuit that was supposed to have been settled with black farmers at that time for $1.2 billion, but a lot of them, including some of the named plaintiffs, said that the whole thing was never about $50,000, but it was about the redress of land laws that had been over the years since that civil rights wing of the USDA had been disbanded. In this case, against the Stein Seed Company, I know the damages of the farmers will have to be calculated in any mediation. Is there a lot of farmers in several of the states that had lost their land based on this? Maybe crops that they had looked to come in and end up losing? Was there any land loss involved?
That's an excellent question. I'm glad you asked that. Because we have one plaintiff or a family that has come forward, or members of the family, rather, have come forward. And when they saw that the lawsuit had been filed, they recalled that, wait a minute, we purchased some seeds from Stein 6, 7, 8 years ago, and we had an awful year. As a matter of fact, we purchased the seeds 2 years in a row.
Wow.
Now, They own several thousand acres of land. And guess what they had to do to clear up the debt associated with the losses that were as a result of purchasing the inferior season? They had to sell 1,500, not 15 acres, but 1,500 acres to sell the debt. Now, where did that 1,500 acres come from? That came from their great-grandfather. So it's devastating. Keep in mind that in 1910, African Americans had acquired over 15 million acres of land. Today, we own less than 2 million acres. So the 14 million acres, the hundreds of billions of dollars that we've lost in real estate can be traced and will be attributable to the devices, the trickery, the subterfuge, the games, as it were, the schemes, not just by Stein, but the millions of other Steins. And here again, this family was thinking that was maybe something we did wrong. But when the lawsuit was filed, and that's the beauty of this lawsuit, not only are black farmers coming out, but hopefully in your show, that it's not only black farmers, it will be black folks in the construction industry, in the hair care industry. As we said, there is a Stein C. Goliath in every city. So it's not just limited to the African-American farming community, and that's why we are hoping that these lawsuits, the black farmers' lawsuits and the Stein lawsuits, rightly understood, should be a model to help elevate. And keep in mind, we are talking about how do we get out of poverty. The war on poverty will only start when we start the contract. We're not going to be able to welfare our way out of poverty. We're not going to get on our food stamps to get out of poverty. Those are remedies to keep us, shall we say, placated. That's the Band-Aid while we're in poverty. In order to come out of poverty, we're going to have to contract our way out of poverty. We're going to have to develop an appreciation for wealth creation and not allow other folk to think that it's something wrong to talk about wealth. Contracts, again, are how we store wealth, how we create wealth, and how we transfer wealth. Now let's go back to that family who had to lost 1,500 acres. There was wealth inherent in that 1,500 acres.
Mm-hmm.
That 1,500 acres was transferred in the form of a will by their grandfather and their great-grandparents. Now the wealth that was inherent in that 1,500 acres was lost because of the trickery by companies like Stein. And I can go on and on and on. An excellent question.
Wow.
We're not going to be able to start realizing prosperity and wealth creation until we understand that we're going to, almost as God told David, if we're going to recover, we have to pursue. And the way you quote unquote sue is just that. We're going to have to develop an appreciation for using that judicial arm, the lawsuit. There's no saying that whatever a man ought to do, he ought to be made to do. So whatever Stein ought to do, and if they're not going to do it, they ought to be made to do it. And that's what Judge Folks did the other day. He says, now, I'm going to make you do what you should have done.
Well, I hope that in this, I think the 60-day or 90-day period, that you can get together with mediation, that many of our folks that have bought seed from this company come, contact the Black Farmers and Agricultural Association, join the Black Farmers and Agricultural Association, because these people need to pay if black farmers have lost their land behind this. Because I know personally several of the farmers that was involved in that Pickford versus Glickman, families that had been involved and came on the program over periods of time have lost tremendous amounts of land. I went to a land loss convention down in North Carolina about 6 years ago, me and one of the former hosts of this program, and I was shocked. I mean, I didn't know, you know, I knew we had black farmers around this country, but I didn't know how much land some of the farmers had. I'm familiar when I used to go down south with my parents, You have farmers down there with 10, 15, 25 acres, 30 acres. And I thought, wow, that's a big farm. Till I went to that landlord, I couldn't believe the amount of land that some of our farmers had, and some of them have lost land. And some of them still had what they considered a small farm with 500 and 600 acres. I mean, it just blew me away.
As I said, we have some members who are growing 5,000, 6,000, 10,000 acres. But here again, as one of you all said, the system doesn't want us to know that.
Exactly.
They don't want you to know that you have people still owning several hundred million dollars worth of property. And this property, interestingly enough, by virtue of the fact that it was handed down, that means it was paid for. So the equity, the wealth that's inherent in that property that could be used to leverage other businesses away from necessary agriculture. That's why we call ourselves black farmers and quote-unquote agriculturalists, meaning we want to move from the production level from farming to grow into processing and further processing and logistics and distribution and ultimately retailing. Here we have black folks buying food in New York and in Philadelphia, and you have black folks owning land in South Carolina and in Mississippi. That's a perfect match.
Yes.
But the system doesn't want the black person who is growing food in Mississippi to connect with the black folks who are consuming food in Michigan and Massachusetts. But that's where the associations, we are going to have to create not only the associational networks, but we're going to have to create the infrastructure. We've got young black men who are now hauling and transport. We use black contractors to transport our commodities. We use black other businesses to cut the soybeans, to haul the soybeans, et cetera. And that's why here again, this model in agriculture, we hope that an appreciation will be developed to show that this is what we call a foundation industry. God said the land will be all that you need. He was saying if you understand the value of land, all of those other opportunities will flow from that. And that's what we are missing, we believe, in this community. So it's just – so when – it's not a matter of receiving the bad seeds. It's what is going to flow from the bad seeds. That means you're going to lose the land. That means you're going to lose an opportunity to grow food, to produce food, to retail food. And all of the jobs, the collateral and ancillary financial opportunities that are inherent with that land.
You know, before we leave, before we transition for the last few minutes of the program, I want you to give out any information again, how to contact you, Mr. Burrell, how to join the organization. And before you mention that, Mr. Burrell, let me say something that I hope in my heart, because I've been involved and talked with members of other organizations, Mr. Gary Grant, Ralph Page, who has passed on. I don't know if anybody has taken control of that Southern Cooperative, but it's other farm groups out there beside the Black Farmers and Agriculturalists Association that you're president of. I hope that in this year of release, this 400 years, that the groups can come together in unity and as one to pursue some of these goals as a unit. And that's just my prayer and hope. But before
we believe that the timing is right and that the 400 years of disunity are over. And here again, this is a new generation. This is another set of 400 years. And that yoke of disunity, God says, now I have what disbanded the yoke. I've taken the band off of your neck that you should what walk upright. So we're hoping now that we can become the community that our ancestors strive for. We've come out of that dark night of disunity and not only unify with other black farm associations, but we want to identify and unify with black associations, period. Because as we said, the struggle, the lawsuits that we have used and perfected some level of facility and utilization could be used with other associations as well and made available to other associations, whether they're in agriculture, whether they're in construction, whether they're, as the brother said, in banking, and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Mr. Burrell, give out the information and the contacts and how people can join and before I let you go.
The Black Farmers and Agriculturalists Association, first and foremost, our telephone number is 901-522-8880. 901-522-8880. Call this office from 8 o'clock Central Time between 8 to 5, and we have a staff. We have a beautiful office here in the city of downtown Memphis, Tennessee. So one of the staff will be able to answer their questions, or you can go online at www.mybfaa.us to visit our webpage. Or you can follow us on our Facebook page at BFAA-Memphis, BFAA-MEMPHIS.
I want to thank you for being with us, Mr. Burrell, and I'll be in touch with you. The door is always open. If anything breaks, you can always come on. The door is always open.
Thank you again. Thank you so very much, Brother Elliot and Brother Richard.
I'll talk.
Thank you.
Talk to you soon.
Yes. Bye.
We'll be right back for the remaining minutes that we have in the program. You can jump in with a call by dialing 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. We'll be right back.
Listening to Time for an Awakening, Time for an Awakening, with host Brother Elliot and Brother Richard on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
All Insurance Incorporated, an African-American owned and operated insurance agency and business for over 20 years, located at 231 Southeastern Road in Glenside, PA, with other offices in Germantown and West Philadelphia. Call now for commercial insurance quotes, homeowners insurance quotes, automobile insurance quotes, notary and tax services, representing over 15 major A-rated insurance companies, offering a discount on all notary services when you call in for a free quote. Call this number, 215-885-2444. That number is 215-885-2444. 215-885-2444. All Insurance Incorporated.
Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley. Dooley Brothers, specializing in shingle, rubber roofs, gutters, downspouts, and vinyl sidings. Call for your free estimate today. 215-224-3882. That's 215-224-3882. Dooley Brothers Roofing, the roofing experts you can trust. That number again, 215-224-3882. 215-224-3882. Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley.
I transformed a $24,000 a year odd job handyman service into a seven-figure high-end custom home builder and commercial contractor licensed and operating in three states. This is just one of the tangible transformations I've created for entrepreneurs in various industries around the country. If this isn't what you think of when you think of accounting and business consulting, then get ready to take down this invaluable information. Are you an entrepreneur suffering with a stagnating company? Have headache customers, staff, or vendors? Are you rebounding from a loss and need help achieving your unrealized potential? Or are you a startup who wants to get it right the first time and avoid the costly mistakes? Hi, my name is Nataki Kamban. If you're ready to go beyond advising and coaching and get results, then call 301-244-9072. Let New Business Solutions recommend and implement the best comprehensive sales, administrative, human resources, accounting, and operations to help you grow into your vision for yourself and your company. Again, from anywhere nationally, call 301-244-9072 or pull us up on your device right now and book your free consultation at www.newbusinesssolutions.com. And just mention you heard the special announcement on Time for an Awakening.
RG Electrical Inspections provides electrical inspections for realtors, licensed electricians, and homeowners. Licensed and insured underwriter, serving Philadelphia and surrounding area. Call today, 484-268-9837.
I must be measured by my soul. The mind is the standard of the man. With this new sense of dignity and this new sense of self-respect, a new Negro came into being with a new determination to suffer, to struggle, to sacrifice, and even to die if necessary in order to be free.
Hang on to the world as it spins around.
All our people are righteous by nature, wicked by circumstance, so we are going to try to save our people. Take control of our communities. Anybody that wants justice, come out of those parties that won't give you justice, and let's have a justice party and set up our own candidates, run them in the cities, take down the weak, blood suckers of the poor, and cast them out, and set up people that will fight for justice for us.
Because there's a whole lot of illusions about Africa's relationship with other people in the world. There's a whole lot of illusion about our relationship to the religions in the world. And these belief systems that had its origin in Africa, all of them, and there is no exception, turned on African people. I said there is no exception. And there's one thing you have to get through your mind and keep it. Nothing that ever came from the European mind was meant to do anything but facilitate European domination of the world. And I said, there's no exception. Everything that was brought into this continent, everything, every idea, every so-called religion, was meant to dominate and to control. The Arabs had no illusions about it. The Europeans had no illusions about it. You were the ones with the illusions. And yet every element that went into the making of every major religion in the world started in Africa. Why is it that you are so naive? You let people redress something that you invented, sell it back to you, and enslave you through it.
If we are to defeat the European, if we are to master this earth and take back this earth from the European, then we must outthink the European. We must then be creative. That puts the learning emphasis on the how-ness, the how to think as such, and to the use of knowledge as a tool of mastery. So it's a very different kind of thing. As a result, you see, the control and the paternalism of Europeans over black people. You see, the other thing that we must recognize, even if the European becomes good and nice and accepts us and so forth, the fact that he would still be in control creates a what we might call a benevolent paternalism, which still to a great degree helps to maintain this passive mode of thinking and this passive mode of knowledge.
Welcome back to Time for an Awakening. I want to thank Mr. Tom Burrell for being with us this evening to kind of give us an update on what has went on with our farmers dealing with this lawsuit. Richard,
yes, sir.
Interesting points that Mr. Burrell was given this evening and was necessary for us to to unify and to fight on all levels, legally, but physically, all levels. We had to develop strategies to fight. It was an interesting conversation. I want to share this article with you, Richard, and the listening audience before we wind up this evening, but go ahead.
No, I was just thinking one of the elements that he said, well, too, the association, but, you know, that now is the time to emphasize that we are wealth creators in business. And I don't, you know, business in a broader sense, not in the narrow sense, because, you know, it, as he said, land is the foundation, but our people was a product. When we go back to 1619, and now we are the producers, and that's how we have to see ourselves when we go up against, as he said, in the metaphorically against these giants. We have to see ourselves as producers, that we can even produce a slingshot that'll take down the Goliath.
Yeah, I know it was a fight. You know, he didn't really go into it, but listen, we've dealt with enough of our people and with ideas to try to move folks forward, and you always had the detractors, and sometimes you have people that are placed there to do that. That's another thing that we have to deal with moving forward. But I know it was a fight getting everybody on one page to kind of move forward with that, because you're going up against what he stated clearly on the phone. You're going up against a billion-dollar corporation here in this country, the largest seed producer in the United States, and I think he said in the world, if I'm not mistaken. Mm-hmm. So when they
well, you know, it also goes back to what I'm thinking the brother from Chicago. Oh man, why can't his name don't come to mind? We had interviewed, and he said we get to be able to work out who's in and who's out by providing the work.
You're talking about Cam, who are you talking about? Cam Allen?
Fred Hampton Jr.
Oh, okay.
You know, when he was saying, when you were like, how do we sift out these people? You know, those farmers who actually farm, who bought those seeds or want to create that yield, they're doing the work. They ain't, you know, they're there to in the association to make sure they because they got debt and, you know, families to feed, future generations to look after. So that's another way to see that how we can sift out, you know, by doing the work.
You know, let me share this article here with the listening audience. Of course, it was one of the articles that I had posted to the Time for Awakening page about 2 weeks ago. At the time, I didn't know who this person was, but it's something that we can put on our scorecards and just put in our memory banks. Check this out, Richard. It says, and this is from the Atlanta Black Star. It says, judge calls out racial bias in case of black man given 15-year sentence after his white accomplice gets 1 year for the same crime. A federal judge in Memphis suspects race played a role in vastly different outcomes for two men accused of committing the exact same crime. The case drew complaints from U.S. District Judge John T. Folks, Jr., involved two drug dealers, one black, one white, who tried selling $800 worth of ecstasy pills to an undercover cop in 2017. Mario Silas, the black defendant, waited inside the car with a woman, while Jared Weatherly, the white defendant, got out of the car and went into the buyer's vehicle to sell him the drugs. It wasn't long before the covert cop gave the signal, and all three were arrested and charged for the crimes. Silas and Weatherly face highly disparaging, highly different consequences, however, I'm sorry. The black man was handed a lengthy 15-year sentence, while the white man is only serving 1 year behind bars. The case and several others like it prompted folks to challenge the issues of racial bias in the prosecutor's office. The magistrate says that he had no choice but to throw the book at Silas due to vastly different charges that the prosecutor sought against the two men. According to the commercial appeals, Silas faced drug charges and several other counts, in addition to a gun charge that carries a mandatory 5-year sentence. Police said Silas had a weapon on him at the time of the deal. That combined with a prior offense and separate federal gun case allowed prosecutors to seek a lengthy term for him. Meanwhile, Weatherly only faced the drug case, leading prosecutors to only seek a 1-year sentence. Folks argued prosecutors could have charged a white man with the gun crime since the two were implicated in the same drug deal involving a gun. This is another situation where white defendants appear to have been treated differently than African Americans. I'm concerned about how we're proceeding in this case, the judge said, according to the transcript on November 19th hearing. The federal prosecutor's office in Memphis vehemently denies racial bias was a factor in the sentencing recommendations. In a statement released from the U.S. attorney, David Devantant, obtained by Memphis Commercial Appeal, stated, "Every case this office brings is unique. We make charges and decisions based on the rule of law and the facts of the case. We make sentence recommendations to the court based on federal sentencing guidelines, which make an account, among other things, each defendant's past history. It is ultimately up to the court to determine the appropriate sentence for each individual. Any suggestions that race plays a role in decisions, whether overtly or implied, is wrong. This isn't the first time folks, who is one of the few black federal judges, has called out racial bias in that prosecutor's office." So we can see here, Richard, that this man seems to be trying to do his job according to the rule of law. I'll just put it out there like that.
It's just the same folks that was in that is involved.
Exactly. The same guy. Mm-hmm. So all we can do, because, I mean, we know what these black politicians and other people that sitting in these offices have done to black people. They've been complicit in the sufferings of our people nationwide. But when you got a guy or two or a woman that seems to put forth decisions that are in our people's favor, they have to be called out on it or have to be singled out. And here it seems to be that this man has been singled out on a couple of occasions for calling out the injustices of these other people.
And it's placed, and it goes to the power of association, the power of politics, and the power of the right selection of individuals for the positions that exist. And they're having the right person in that judge, obviously in that district, you know, is the right kind of judge because of our political association is a powerful, important thing, as you say, and he should be acknowledged for it.
I want to thank everybody for listening to the program this evening. And before we leave the air tonight, I just want to give the lineup for next week, Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays, African Perspectives with Brother Oshie from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Always an interesting show with Brother Oshie and his guests. But 6 that evening, Acres of Diamonds with Brother Jihad Ahmed from 6 to 8 on Time for an Awakening. On Tuesday, Black Reality Think Tank with Dr. William Rogers from 8 to 10 on Time for an Awakening. On Wednesday, Revive is back with Sister POC from 8 to 10 on Time for an Awakening. On Thursday, Relationships with Joy and Troy from 7 to 8 on Time for an Awakening. And then Friday, Time for Awakening is back from 8 to 10. I want to thank everybody for listening to the program this evening. Lively discussion, as always, and we'll be back on Friday, Lord willing, to continue on this path towards an awakening. Peace.
Peace.
If you're driving through the country on a lazy afternoon, or you're watching your children playing after school, children. Soon it will be their turns to try and save the world. Right now they seem to play such a small part of children.